मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयत् गिगिरिं यत् पादमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारणम् ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल. आई एम सॉरी फॉर द ब्लिप लिटिल बिट ऑफ अ ब्लिप इन द कंटेंट आई एम ट्राइंग टू रिकॉर्ड सो व्हेन आई डू स्टार 9 इट गिव्स मी टू ऑप्शंस आई डिडंट गेट दैट ऑप्शन सो सॉरी अबाउट दैट. So thank you all for joining, and I apologize for the delay in sending out the email today. I'm a little disoriented because, yeah. All right, so we read, last week we started reading Kunti Devi's prayers, and we read from text 18 to 24, or I think we read to text 25, which is the Vipada Sadhu Tu Shashwat, Santu Tu Shashwat. So far we read that Lord Krishna is the benefactor Suridam for the Pandavas, and he is always there with them. And the reason he's always there with them is also we discussed about the characteristics of the Pandavas, so with whatever we read in the 7th and the 8th chapter. And he's always with them, and they are completely unknowing devotees of Sri Krishna. So now, after everything is done, when Lord Sri Krishna was about to leave, then we saw that Ashwatthama threw a brahmastra and was attacking Uttara's womb. And then everyone saw how the Lord protected her. So now when he's leaving, finally, he's leaving. You know, like usually you know when somebody is going to leave. But when finally it dawns on you that, hey, this is reality, this is happening right now, then it really affects us completely. And that's when the reality hits him. So now when they are seeing that Krishna is going on the chariot, so then all Kunti Devi, Draupadi and all the Pandavas, they come around him and they express their feelings. And Kunti Devi starts speaking. It's not that she had to prepare what she has to speak. Right? When we have to say something somewhere, we have to be very inside, we have to be prepared. Okay, I'll say this point, this point, this point, this point, this point. And then I'll say this point, and then I'll say this point, and then I'll say this point, and then I'll conclude like this. But here Kunti Devi is the most unalloyed devotee of the Lord. And she, this whatever she's speaking is like, she's just her heart, she's speaking completely. So this shows the quality of that devotee, that, you know, what a great devotee she is. You know, for us to be able to speak properly, speak through concepts, we have to prepare. But here, because she's so spiritually situated, she's speaking and sharing her heart out. Our love and devotion for Lord Sri Krishna. And it is recommended for all of us to chant Kunti Devi's prayers. So the first three verses, she talks about, you know, she establishes the position of Lord Sri Krishna. Because she is not offering prayers to him just because he is her nephew. You know, we might follow in her footsteps and may, you know, some, you know, she doesn't want that to happen. She wants people to understand that, no, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I love him because, and I have affection for him. Of course, he is my nephew. But he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and I am his devotee. So she is establishing Lord Sri Krishna's position that, and to make us understand, she is telling, you know, he is Namo. What is the verse? What the verse is? Namaste Purusham Twadyam Ishwaram Pratite Param Alaksham Sarva Bhutanam Antar Bahiravastitam Maya Javanikatanam Agnya Dhukshajam Avyayam Na Lakshase Modhadrishe Uto Natya Daro Yatha Ata Paramaham Sanam Muminam Amlatanam Bhakti Yoga Vidhanartam Katham Pashye Mahistriya. So in these first three verses she is establishing, first verse she is establishing the position of the Lord, and she is establishing he is Guru, you know, Supreme Purush, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Adhyam, eternally. And he cannot be understood by the fools. And why he cannot be understood by the fools, she gives three reasons in the next verse. It is Vaya Javanikachanam, the pattern of Maya. Agnya Dhukshajam Avyayam, because we are ignorant and the Lord cannot be perceived by our senses in Dhukshaja. And then the third reason she gives is we are mudas. Why? Because Krishna has given us so many ways in which we can know him. You know, so hum up to contrary. Saying, you know, and the taste of water and the strength and the strong. Anything wonderful you see, we can connect it with the Lord. Second Canto Bhagavatam also gives that thing. That how one can see initially because we are so materially inclined. one can see, learn to see everything in connection with the Lord, the universe. So gradually then the awe and reverence will come. But that's why we are considered as mudras. And then she's telling that, you know, you come to increase the devotion of the Tatha Paramahamsas and the Munis and the Amalatmanas, you know, the monists and the completely free from vice people, Amalatmanas. You're coming to increase the devotion of the Lord, and how can I, a mere woman, know you? So then we also learn that we have to have the same mood of humility. Because the very reason she's telling that, you know, how can other people know you and mudhas cannot see you and you're just like an actor and dressed in a play. So she's telling it's difficult to see you. That means she has seen him. That's why she can describe like this. So we learn that the only way to see the Lord is to hear very carefully from the Mahajans and follow in their footsteps nicely. And we have to also have this mood of humility. And then she says, Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Chinanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. She's telling this thing that, no, but you are coming, you know, in all these different bellows of different pastimes with everyone. That's why we can know you. And then she's telling Krishnaya Vasudevaya, this impersonalist thing, you're just the impersonal conception, but actually you are much more than that. So she's explaining all of that. And then she's explaining Namo Pankaja Nabhaya, Namo Pankaja Malini. So she's telling, okay, you know, if so basically the theme of that one was, if we see a lotus, we can remember Krishna. Because when we see a lotus, you can remember that he has a depression like a lotus on his belly. His feet are like lotus, eyes are like lotus. He's wearing a garland of lotus. So Krishna consciousness is very simple. Even if we are not very knowledgeable and all, but if we remember the Lord in any one of his relationships, if we remember his pastimes, and if we hear his pastimes, we will become close to the Lord. And also, if we see things related to Krishna, then we are able to remember the Lord like that. Like the lotus example, or when once Radha Krishna Prabhu said, when you see the sky in the color blue, do you think of Krishna? No problem. Then he said, you have to hear more carefully. Or when you see a flower, then do you see Krishna? You see this flower, budding flower, and this blooming flower is like Krishna's smile. Do you feel that? I said, no, Prabhu. He said, then you have to read more. So by then we can always be Krishna conscious. Krishna has made it so easy for us. So then after that, after she says all of that, then she says that she is offering gratitude to God in 23 and 24. That, you know, you saved us from so many difficult situations. In all the difficult situations. And then she says, let these calamities happen again and again. Why? Because bhavatu darshanam yatsyad apunar bhava darshanam. So when I am in these calamities, that means you're always there to help us, and you're always there to save us, and you're always there to protect us. And now, because all the calamities are done and all the kings have been put to their places and everything is fine, and now you're leaving us. So for me, Kunti Devi is telling basically that comparing these peaceful situations with those difficult situations, I would at any time prefer those difficult situations, because you're always there with us in the difficult situations and we always get your darshan. So for the devotee, darshan of the Lord is much, much more precious than a suitable material situation. Like, we will hear many people when you're sharing Krishna consciousness with them, and even in your own life, you can see, you know, we are more trying our best to make our life situation suitable. And you think, okay, after I do this, I'll go to Krishna. After I do this, I'll go to Krishna. But in that situation also, Krishna is there with us, and we can see that situation also as Krishna. That Krishna is putting me in this situation so that I can give up this. But you know, it's becoming difficult for me. But if I can change my vision about this situation, then it would be easier for me. I can see, I can understand the situation as Krishna's personal intervention, where he wants me to learn something out of this, where he wants me to take shelter of him. So, but we don't pray like Kunti Devi for calamities. Now, we also understood that there are two levels of understanding this verse. The first level is where we may pray for calamities, because only in calamities we remember Krishna. There is one level of understanding. The higher level of understanding is that in calamities, the Lord was always there for them, and he always had the darshan of the Lord and the close association of the Lord, and he got to do service to the Lord because the Lord was always there for them. That's why she wishes for calamities. At our level, we don't pray for calamities because we are not at Devi's level. At our level, if we pray for calamities, those calamities might be difficult for us to deal with, and we may go out of Krishna consciousness. So at our level, if we want to pray like Kunti Devi, then we pray for continuous devotional service. Please accept me in your service. Please engage me in your service. We continuously pray for service. And then we get purified through service. We don't. This purification through difficulties is something that we may not be able to take. And some of us, it may be so difficult, we may get out of Krishna consciousness altogether. So we don't pray like that. So now, having said all that, so we summarize from text 18 to 25. And we'll start with the verses of today. This is also a very beautiful verse. Text 26. Janmeshwarya Shruti Shribhir Edhamana Madhatuman Naivar Hatya Bhidhatum Dai Swam Akinchana Gocharam. Text 26. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So, we'll read this purport. I'll request Shalini Mataji to read the purport.
Yes, Mataji. Thank you. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Being materially advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic family and possessing great wealth and education, attractive personal beauty. All materialistic men are mad after possessing all these material opulences, and this is known as the advancement of material civilization. But the result is that by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly, O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of sins that he is unable to commit. So, such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the least exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such powerful potency, but there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely, 1. High percentage, 2. Good wealth, 3. High education, and 4. Attractive beauty, are so to speak, just qualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. The material covering of the pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever in an external feature of the unhealthy body. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by a mild treatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritually advanced persons become materially impoverished. This is no discouragement. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign, as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, it leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Grossly illusioned persons are quite unfit for entrance into the kingdom of God. Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you so much for reading this purport. Very nicely written by Srila Prabhupada. The main line in this is, the material covering of the pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever is an external feature of the unhealthy body. So just having this particular body over covering of this 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair, the size of the soul is covered by this huge material body. That itself is our disease. Then on top of that, we identify with these things that, oh, I have a high birth, I have so much opulence, I have such a high education, I know so many shlokas, oh, I'm an engineer, I'm a doctor, I've done my master's, I've done my PhD. And I have this bodily beauty. So already this is a disease. Then plus we further go into the disease by thinking about all of these things. So what Bhakti Devi is telling is, My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. So if we have these things, if we are attached to these things, then it is some kind of, it is detrimental for our spiritual progress. Now, does this mean we don't possess these things? Does it mean that, oh my God, if I have a high birth, or if I have opulence, or if I have high education, or if I have bodily beauty, that means I cannot become a devotee of the Lord? Does it mean that?
No, Mataji.
Then what does this mean?
If we look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita example, I think it's Ramananda Roy. He was also very, very materially opulent. But again, he was a very big devotee of Lord Chaitanya. It looks like that he is materially puffed up and all those things, but internally he was very down to earth and a very sincere devotee of Lord. So if we have, even Lord Krishna also said in Bhagavad Gita that the one who is unsuccessful, you'll be in a path of spiritual progress. One who does not complete his path, then that person gets next birth in a very aristocratic family. So that I think the only basis is that whatever opulence one has, one should dedicate that in the service of Krishna.
So thank you so much for clarifying this point. That means this high birth, high great opulence, high education, bodily beauty in themselves are not disqualifications. But usually what happens is when somebody has that and if they don't have the right spiritual conception, then there are tendencies of greed, egoism, selfishness that come along with these things. If someone does not have the proper conception, and if, as Shalini Mataji said, if someone is not using them in service to Krishna properly, then they will always be led, they will always be in that difficulty of having these particular concepts. You know, they will have these tendencies of greed, egoism and selfishness, which come out, which so often come with these things. And that are the greatest disqualifications. And then I read this quote in one of the lectures. The culture of wealth should be a culture of gratitude and humility. So if somebody has these things, then you should be thankful to Krishna. And then you should think, okay, how can I use it in Krishna's service? This is only what Krishna has given me. It is not mine. How can I use it in Krishna's service? So to the degree, we think that we are great, we are intelligent, we are beautiful, we are spiritually advanced, we are coming from a high family. To that degree, whatever we do is useless. Because then it is not service. It is self-aggrandizement. And in the Bhagavad Gita, there is also this verse, text 244, text 44. Bhogeshwarya prasatanam taya pahrita jitam jiva sayatrika buddhi samadhauna dhiyate. Basically, the resolute determination for devotional service cannot take place in the heart of one who has an attraction to bhoga, like basically sexual enjoyment, and aishwarya, material opulence. So, how not to have that? So, if we all have some, any of one of these things, or all four of these things. Now, if we have these things, we want to understand Kunti Devi's verse here. That, you know, it can only be approached by those who are materially exhausted. So, how not we should let these things affect us? And if first thing is even to become aware, one thing is to even observe in yourself if you have pride related to these things. If you feel you are great because you have these things. And then one thing is to identify that. And then the second thing is to work upon it. And to pray to Krishna. Krishna, you know, I don't want these things in my heart. Please let me overcome these things. Please let me, please remove these things from my heart. Because I only want to serve you. I know if I have these things in my heart, which is that where I feel I am great because of these things, where then I develop more greed, egoism and selfishness. And then I know this is detrimental to my bhakti. I want to be materially exhausted, as Kunti Devi is telling, which means I want to be materially exhausted means I understand that there is no happiness in this material realm. I want to be exhausted of all these sensual pleasures that I have engaged in and all these different mindsets I have of greed, envy, selfishness, egoism, because that is not the way for me. No, only bliss I can get is by serving the your own lotus feet and the lotus feet of your devotee. So we will read the next verse, and by the time I'll request all of you to also think about, you know, where it is in your heart. I have it in my heart, and I'm willing to share. So where is this thing in your heart, and what you want to do about it? And if you can't see it in your heart right now, then pray to Krishna to reveal it to you, if it is there. Text 27. Namo kinchina vittaya nivritta guna vrittaye atmaramaya shantaya kevalya patahe namaha. She says, my obeisances unto you who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are the master of the monist. So we'll read this purport. It's very nice. Prabhupada has explained the same thing again, and he is giving that example of Raghunath Das Goswami here, and also the previous verse, Shalini Mataji gave us the example of Ramananda Rai. Shalini Mataji, can you read this entire purport for us? Text 27.
Yes, Mataji. Give me 1 second, Mataji. A living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. Therefore, a living being cannot be, in the real sense of the term, a renouncer. A living being renounces something for gaining something more valuable. A student sacrifices his childish proclivities to gain better education. A servant gives up his job for a better job. Similarly, a devotee renounces the material world not for nothing, but for something tangible and spiritual value. Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami and others gave up their worldly pomp and prosperity for the sake of the service of the Lord. They were big men in the worldly sense. The Goswamis were ministers in the government service of Bengal, and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of a big zamindar of his time. But they left everything to gain something superior to what they previously possessed. The devotees are generally without material prosperity, but they have a very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord. There is a nice story about Srila Sanatan Goswami. He had a touchstone, and this stone was left in a pile of refuse. A needy man took it, but later on wondered why the valuable stone was kept in such a neglected place. He therefore asked Sanatana for the most valuable thing, and then he was given the holy name of the Lord. Akinchana means one who has nothing to give materially. A sexual devotee or Mahatma does not give anything material to anyone because he has already left all material assets. He can, however, deliver the supreme asset, namely the personality of Godhead. He is the only property of a sexual devotee. The touchstone of Sanatan Goswami, which was thrown in the rubbish, was not the property of the Goswami. Otherwise, it would not have been kept in such a place. This specific example given for the neophyte devotees just to convince them that material hankering and spiritual advancement go ill together. Unless one is able to see everything as spiritual in relation to the Supreme Lord, one must always distinguish between spirit and matter. A spiritual master like Srila Sanatan Goswami, although personally able to see everything as spiritual, set this example for us only because we have so much spiritual vision. We have no such spiritual vision. Advancement of material vision or material civilization is a great stumbling block for spiritual advancement. Such material advancement entangles the living being in the bondage of a material body, followed by all sorts of material miseries. Such material advancement is called anartha, a thing not wanted. Actually, this is so. In the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at a cost of 50 cents. There are so many unwanted things which are all products of the material conception of life. By delivering attention to so many unwanted things, human energy is spoiled without achievement of spiritual realization, a prime necessity of human life. The attempt to reach the moon is another example of spoiling energy, because even if the moon is reached, the problems of life will not be solved. The devotees of the Lord are called akinchanas because they have practically no material assets. Such material assets are all products of the three modes of material nature. They foil spiritual energy, and thus the less we possess such products of material nature, the more we have a good chance for spiritual progress. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no direct connection with material activities. All his acts and deeds, which are exhibited even in this material world, are spiritual and without affection for the modes of the material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that all his acts, even his appearance and disappearance in and out of the material world, are transcendental. And one who knows this perfectly shall not be birth again in this material world, but will go back to Godhead. The material disease is due to hankering after and lording over material nature. This hankering is due to an interaction of the three modes of nature, and neither the Lord nor the devotees have attachment for such false enjoyment. Therefore, the Lord and the devotees are called Nivrata Gunavritti. The perfect Nivrata Gunavritti is the Supreme Lord, because he never becomes attracted by the modes of material nature. Whereas living beings have such a tendency. Some of them are entrapped by the illusionary attraction of material nature. Because the Lord is the property of the devotees and the devotees are the property of the Lord reciprocally, the devotees are certainly transcendental to the modes of material nature. That is a natural conclusion. Such unalloyed devotees are distinct from the mixed devotees who approach the Lord for mitigation of miseries and poverty, or because of inquisitiveness and speculation. The unalloyed devotees and the Lord are transcendently attached to one another. For others, the Lord has nothing to reciprocate, and therefore he is called Atmarama, self-satisfied. Self-satisfied as he is the master of all monists who seek to merge into the existence of the Lord. Such monists merge within the personal effulgence of the Lord called the Brahma Jyoti. But the devotees enter into the transcendental aspects of the Lord, which are never to be misunderstood as material.
Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you so much. That's a very long purpose by Srila Prabhupada. Very nicely given to us. So the summary is, we read about the touchstone, and you know what is more valuable than the touchstone is the holy name of the Lord. So Sanatana Goswami did care for that. But he gave this particular touchstone. In fact, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami were very high. They had very high posts in the government of Bengal. They gave up everything because they found that they don't want to waste their time in that. They surrendered completely to the Lord. And then they took up almost a renounced order. So from these two things, we have to see how much of our time is going in spiritual activities in the eternal time zone, and how much of our activities is going in the temporary time or the temporary time zone. How much of our time is going in maintaining the status of high birth, high education, good wealth, beauty, and how much of our time is going in actually serving the Lord? How much of our consciousness is attached to these material bodily identifications of high birth, beauty, wealth, and high education? And how much of our consciousness is attached to the spiritual identification of that I am a servant of Krishna and his devotees? Where is our consciousness? See, the point is that's the only thing. You can read all of these things. We can memorize. I can memorize entire Kuntavevi prayers. But where is my consciousness? Am I identifying with these things, or am I identifying with my identity as servant of Krishna? So we have to change this conception. We are all suffering with this bodily identification. And all these things further increase our bodily identification. Everyone wants to be proud of something. So then we have some of these things and we become very proud of something, because we feel that it gives us some security, that gives us some social standing. But there is no point to this social standing, because this society is also temporary. This material world which is defining the society is temporary. Why should I base my standing on that? I don't want to base my standing on this thing. I want to base my standing on being completely satisfied in being an eternal servant, part and parcel of Krishna. So the disease, as Prabhupada is telling, is this material body and this hankering for material things. And the medicine is the process of devotional service, which begins by serving the devotees, developing an affinity to hear, regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and serving the devotees, and chanting the holy names of the Lord. Gradually we will be purified. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Gopinath's instructions to Devahuti, which we just read when Radha Krishna Prabhu was there, and I was searching for that shloka for years, because when I read that shloka about 4 or 5 years ago, I was very moved by it. And I made notes of that shloka in a notebook. And then I wasn't able to find that notebook. But we were very fortunate when we were reading with Radha Krishna Prabhu. We were able to read that shloka with him. And the essence of that shloka, and I'll share it in email also, is that the more we engage in this process of devotional service, basically we have to give up this false ego, this false pride, this false illusion, this false identification. So some of it we do by this introspection. But our introspection and our own hard work is impossible because this material energy is very difficult to overcome. But we have to make 100% effort, and the Lord will have mercy on us to remove all of these things. So the more, that shloka says, the more we engage in devotional service, the process of devotional service, which Prabhupada has given us a wonderful opportunity to practice, the more our subtle body will dissolve. The gross body, we can see, okay, now when the body is dead, then it is deteriorating, and it goes away. But the subtle body seems very invincible, very formidable, very strong, very obstinate. The false ego is very difficult to overcome. So now we want to overcome this thing. So that shloka says that the more we engage in devotional service, the more our false ego and false conceptions of life will get dissolved. And more we do that, we will be strengthened more and more in our eternal identity. And less our bodily, this false identity will bother us. Right now we are so bothered by that false identity, right? Somebody says something, I'll release the Dhammatra if it doesn't sit down well with me. Because it is affecting my false ego in some way. Oh, I am so and so, and this person is speaking to me in so and so way and insulting me. Or I am so and so, how can this person do this to me? How can this person hurt me? So we have this all false conception, and everything is actually a dream, like a dream. So our only hope is serving very sincerely, serving the devotees, chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, serving the devotees, and you know, following the orders of Guru and Krishna. We may do a lot of service, but as we read in the second chapter, that the service also has to be done under some authority. Prabhupada writes down in the purport. So when we do it under authority, then we are taken care of. And if you only do service and if you don't hear, then it will just become like some good karma. But if we hear properly lectures and we serve nicely, then the combination is perfect. So we have to see these things in our life and we have to work on removing them. Or life can be very humbling. If we don't work on removing these things, then Krishna will arrange situations by which we will have to force ourselves to remove these things, and it will be very painful. So let us do the goldsmith work. Let us do that small goldsmith work and shape our lives nicely as a devotee of the Lord. The reason we want to do all these things is because all these things are blocking us from serving Krishna 100%, serving devotees 100%, giving our 100%. But so when we work on these things and we work on removing these things by positively taking shelter of the Lord and positively engaging in the process of devotional service, then that is like goldsmith work. It will help us. If we don't do this work, internal work, then there will be blacksmith work. Krishna will come with a big hammer in our life and he'll go boom. And then we may either wallow in and think, oh no, I'm suffering so much. Oh no, my life is so difficult. Oh no, I can't take it. Oh no. Or we understand, no, Krishna is telling me, hey, you need to work on this thing. Nobody said life was good. I never said, I never promised that you will get bliss in material world. I never said this is Sukhalayam and Shashvatam. I said this is Dukhalayam and Shashvatam. And I never said this is Nityam Sukham Lokam. I said this is Anityam Asukham Lokam. So why are you thinking that your life you will have is going to be happy, and if this situation is not happy, you want to run away from that situation? No, it's not going to be like that. I never promise that. I never break promises. So life is like that. I like to remember the metaphor of getting your teeth cleaned. So you are in the dental chair, your mouth wide open. And then in India, the dentist cleans your teeth, but here they have assistants, people who are specialized in cleaning the teeth. They have a degree in that. They clean your teeth. You know the teeth. So when you come to the process of bhakti, you came with a reason. You want to completely serve the Lord. You're attracted to that. So you're in that. So you willingly came to the dentist. You took the appointment. You came there. Now in the cleaning process has started, you want to run away. This is too painful for me. I'll go to another dentist. I'll go to another God. But we are willingly come over there, and the dentist process has to happen. The churning, the cleaning has to happen. Those squeaky noises have to be felt. That your suction pump has to be put in your mouth. The water has to be put in your mouth. Some places you will bleed. And then when they do a little bit cleaning, you know, a lot of things comes out. But then to remove the dirt that is there really stuck inside, the plaque and everything that's like really deep inside. They have to do deep cleaning, which gets more painful and more irritating and more annoying. So, but if we willingly brush our teeth nicely, take care of our dental health, we don't have to go to the dentist. So we need to do this regular work in our life. Constantly watching every action we are doing, okay, what is my motivation here? Am I doing it for serving to Krishna, or am I doing it to please myself, to satisfy my false ego? What is my motivation here? What am I doing this for? Oh, this time I didn't do it right. Oh, that was my motivation. Okay, next time Krishna, I don't want this to be my motivation, because I want to achieve you. So I'm going to give up this thing. I am ready to give up any of my conceptions, any of my thought processes, any of my associations with different people and thought processes or anything. If it is detrimental to reaching your service of your lotus feet and the service of the lotus feet of the devotees. You don't understand what is service. So, we regularly commit to the process of brushing our teeth every day very nicely, flossing our teeth, putting the mouthwash and doing all of those things nicely. Then you don't have to go for their monthly or 6 monthly cleaning to the dentist. Right? So, if you do this goldsmith work, if you do this daily cleaning work nicely, then you don't have to go to the dentist. You don't have to go and get the blacksmith work done. So, it's very, actually, you know what? A devotee feels very enlivened when they discover something about themselves which is not so positive for Krishna consciousness. Usually people don't feel enlivened when they find some fault within themselves. You know, usually we are able to see some fault happens or something happens. We know immediately it comes inside. Hey, you didn't do this in the right way. This was wrong on your part. But we don't want to accept it. The reason we don't want to accept it is because we want to think we are perfect beings. So if there is any blemish I can see, then I want to put the blame on somebody else. I reacted like this because this person did this to me. Or, you know, so we put the blame on other people, or we put the blame on, I didn't know better. Oh, come on, why didn't you know better? You should have tried to know better. That is not any excuse. Or this is not my fault, it's this person's fault. If you find in yourself, you're constantly blaming the situation and the environment and the other people for whatever you are feeling and however you are responding, then some growth needs to be done. That is like a childlike response. We want to give an adult response that I am responsible for how I am responding, irrespective of the situation, because I am choosing to respond like this. So we want to be openly embrace even the bad parts of ourselves, not the not so good parts. Why? Because when we embrace them, when we accept them, that okay, it's humbling to find these things in ourselves. But if we openly accept them, then from acceptance comes transformation. Then you can work on them. But if you don't accept them only in the first place, no, it's not because of me, it's because of this person and that person and this situation and all. And you will remain in that rut. But if you accept, then no, it's because of me. I am responding like this. And repeatedly I am responding like this because I'm habituated. But I want to work on this habit. I want to work on this particular... I want to overcome this conditioning of mine. And that is what we covered in the habit seminar on Saturdays. Accept good ones and break the bad ones. And the audios are uploaded in the resources section on the Facebook page. And all of you can hear it if you want. So we want to be open. And the reason we want to openly accept these things and work upon these things is so that we can really serve Krishna. Otherwise, imagine you are full of pride and you're serving, you're making some garland in the temple and thinking that, wow, I'm the best garland maker. That's not service to Krishna. That's service to your own false ego and your own false conception of self. But if you are serving, if you're working on this thing, that okay, that thing may come in your head again, oh, I'm such a great garland maker. But you're like, no, no, please, I don't want to act with this thing. Because I want to really serve Krishna. If I have this pride in my heart, then it is not good. At the same time, we don't become disappointed also. Another tendency of the false ego is to become completely disappointed. Oh no, I'm so useless, I'm so fallen, I'm good for nothing, I can't do anything right, I'm this and that. This is also coming from some false ego in me. Because somewhere the false ego wants to believe they're perfect and they cannot tolerate the fact that they're not perfect. So, we don't want to worry about this perfection and imperfection if I'm the best or not, because somewhere we are trying to compete with Krishna in that. We want to lovingly accept our good parts and our bad parts. If we are feeling so destitute and so depressed when we notice something bad in us or something that needs to be worked upon in us, that is also coming from false ego. Because we want to believe we are perfect, so we cannot tolerate the fact that we are not perfect, and so we either lament, as the second case, or the first case is we push the blame on the other person. Both of them are coming from the false ego only. A devotee is humble. A devotee realistically accepts his or her situation, his or her conditioning. Does not get depressed by it. But he is very enthused that, wow, Krishna showed this thing to me. I'm so fortunate. If I work upon this, I get one step closer to Krishna. So that is the attitude we want to develop. Positive attitude, even when you see things. So, either we suffer from very high, unhealthy high self-esteem or very low, unhealthily low self-esteem. We want to have the right self-esteem. Right self-estimation. Okay, this is good, this is not so good. Fine, this is good, I'll use it properly in service to Krishna, this is not so good, let's work upon it. It's very, very neutrally accept both. And when we can do that, we can serve Krishna properly. And we can work upon these things. And, you know, right now we may be able to offer only 1% of our potential to Krishna. But then the more and more we work, you will see the potential rising. You'll remove these things, you'll see, wow, now I can do more because this particular aspect of mine is gone. Oh, now I can do more because now this particular aspect of mine also has been worked upon. And then the more you work upon, the more endeavor you give, Krishna will give us mercy. Because on our own, it is very difficult to overcome. We have to at least try something so that the Lord can reward us, right? If you want, if you want a medal in a race, you have to at least run the race. Even if you don't get a medal, at least you'll get some participation certificate. But if you don't even run the race, you will not get any participation certificate. So here the Lord is ready to help us. But at least you have to put in some effort, some introspection, some effort has to be put in. And the Lord will just help us and remove everything. But we have to put some effort. Yes, chanting and hearing will help. But just to even chant properly, our heart has to be in a particular condition. So when we say chant, then everything will be fine. Means you have to chant, but you have to bring your heart in the proper condition also to be able to chant nicely. And when you say, if you just hear everything, you know, Krishna will personally cleanse. When we hear, it also includes the fact that we act upon what we have heard. And there will be many things like that we are discovering in ourselves. So you just pick one and focus on it. Automatically, that will have a cascade effect and it will fix a lot of other things also. Then you pick up the next thing and you work on it. Then you pick up the next thing and you work on it. We are not pure devotees, we have some defects. So, I worry if we are not perfect. We are not perfect anyway. So, gradually pick one thing and keep working on it, and having a buddy helps, sharing with somebody helps. But again, not in a lamenting way or not in a very haughty way. Lamenting ways, I'm so useless, I have this thing. Or haughty ways, no, I didn't do it, it's not my fault. Both cases are springing from the false ego. I've said this like 3 times. I'm sorry for repeating myself. Text 28.
Manye tvam palamishanam anadi nidanam vibhum samam charantam sarvatra bhutanam yanmitakali.
My Lord, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. I'll request somebody to read the purport, and if, or if Shalini Mataji can read, that is good, but if she's already read two long purports.
Hare Krishna Mataji, I'm so sorry. I'm outside Mataji. I'm not in the book. Sorry, Mataji.
Oh, no problem. Can somebody else read the purport, please? I don't know who all are on the call.
Hare Krishna, you want me to do it?
Yeah, please go ahead. Please read the purport. Text 28.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kunti Devi knew that Krishna was neither her nephew nor an ordinary family member of her paternal house. She knew perfectly well that Krishna is the primeval Lord who lives in everyone's heart as a super soul, Paramatma. Another name of the Paramatma feature of the Lord is Kala, or eternal time. Eternal time is the witness of all our actions, good and bad, and thus resultant reactions are designed by him. It is no use saying that we do not know why and for what we are suffering. We may forget the misdeed for which we may suffer at this present moment, but we must remember that Paramatma is our constant companion, and therefore he knows everything, past, present and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna designs all actions and reactions, he is the supreme controller too. Without his sanction, not a blade of grass can move. The living beings are given as much freedom as they deserve, and misuse of that freedom is the cause of suffering. The devotees of the Lord do not misuse their freedom, and therefore they are the good sons of the Lord. Others who misuse freedom are put into miseries designed by the eternal Kala. The Kala offers a conditioned source both happiness and miseries. It is all designed by eternal time. As we have miseries uncalled for, so we may have happiness also without being asked, for we are all designed by Kala. No one is therefore either an enemy or friend of the Lord. Everyone is suffering and enjoying the result of his own destiny. This destiny is made by the living beings in course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over the material nature, and thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and therefore he can see everyone's activities. And because the Lord has no beginning or end, he is known also as the eternal time, Kala. Haribol.
Thank you. The dissection between living beings are due to social intercourse, and Prabhupada is, I like the last part very much. It is all predestined by eternal time, as we have miseries uncalled for, so we may have happiness also without being asked. So they are all predestined by Kala. No one is therefore either an enemy or a friend of the Lord. Everyone is suffering and enjoying the result of his own destiny. And this destiny is made by the living beings in course of social intercourse. So whatever activities we are doing with each other, we are creating our future. We are inculcating karma. So we want to be very careful. Krishna is equally distributing his mercy. But some of us are not getting it. Some of us are, because we don't know how to receive. We are stuck in our own rut. So nobody is enemy or friend. So basically, don't waste time in all these things. Hey, why you did this to me? Hey, why you did that to me? That person is like this, this person is like that, and all that. Just forget everything, you know, because you know this. You created your own karma, and instead of entangling yourself further and trying to analyze the situation, Prabhupada is telling, it is no use saying that we do not know why and for what we are suffering. There's no point in analyzing all these things. Just do your service nicely. Please now start doing things in eternal time and not in temporary time. We'll end here for the day. Next week, Tuesday, text 29 onwards. And the prayers go on till 34. Very beautiful prayers. So, are there any thoughts for anyone to share? We read from about 4 or 5 verses today. Would anyone like to share anything? There was one point I missed, which is in text 26 and 27. It's a major point. It's basically the high birth and the great opulence and high education and bodily beauty. One thing is to be proud of them, and another thing is also we consider that as our shelter. So we think in times of difficulty, these things will help us. Right? There was a story by Radha Gopinath Prabhu that he was sharing, that he had become a brahmachari and he was doing fine. Everything was fine. After 10-12 years, he just got one letter from his brother. that this family home I am selling, because there's no point in having this big home, so I'm going to sell this house. And then I'm going to, you know, whatever his brother was going to do. So his brother came from Radha Gopinath Prabhu as my letter. And Radha Gopinath Prabhu was in the ashram, Brahmachari ashram. Radha Gopinath Prabhu was a Brahmachari already for so many years. So Radha Gopinath Prabhu, so nicely he was sharing, so honestly, he was sharing that after he got the letter, he was not able to sleep in the night. He was not able to concentrate on his services the next day. He was not able to sleep the following night. And then he was wondering why he's not able to fall asleep. Why he's thinking about that house so much. Why he's thinking this. Why he's thinking that. Why he's so disturbed. Anyway, he was not staying in that house. Anyway, he's given his life as a brahmachari. Anyway, he's continuing here. He's doing services here. He doesn't go and stay over there. He lives in the ashram. And he's continuously engaged in devotional service. And he's renounced everything. Then why is he feeling so disturbed that the letter has come? Then he so honestly he shared to inspire all of us that when he got that letter, basically what he realized after 3 days of not being able to sleep properly is that in his mind, his shelter was not the Radha Gopinath deities of that temple. The name of the deities is also Radha Gopinath over there. Because in his mind, he said somewhere in the back of the mind, in a very subtle way, the thought was there that if anything goes wrong in the ashram, I will go back to my house. If I don't get along with something or if there becomes some problem in the ashram, I'll go back to my house. So he was thinking that because when that house was being sold, somewhere I had considered it as my shelter in times of difficulty, and that I would go away over there. He said, then I realized that that's why I was so disturbed. He said, then I also realized that I have not made Krishna my only shelter. That's why I'm thinking if there is any problem in this temple of Radha Gopinath, then I will run away. I'll go to that house and stay over there, and then I'll continue in something else. I also have something in physiotherapy. I'll do that. So he said, in my mind, I was not thinking, whatever difficulty may come, anything will come. Radha Gopinath is my shelter. They will protect me. So if we have any of these four things, and if we identify with these things, having is not wrong, but if we identify with these things, they become our false shelters. Like some of us, we're sharing in the habit seminar, we depend upon our own abilities. So sometimes we say, oh, my father is my parents. You know, someone will say, oh, I have a lot of wealth. And someone will say, I'm very beautiful. I'll get this and that in my life. So we tend to think of these things as shelter also in for our difficult times. But actually, these things are also temporary. Opulence is temporary. Your education, your memory may just go away. Your beauty is, everyone knows it will go away. That's why there is this business of anti-wrinkle creams. And respectable parentage is there today, is not there tomorrow. So these cannot be our shelter. They are all false shelters because they are in the material shelters. How can material shelters be true shelters? So we don't want these to be our shelters. Sorry, I forgot to share that major point. Yeah, is there anything anyone would like to share? And if the Skype people would like to disconnect, but please don't do that because there is some problem in Skype that if one person disconnects, then the entire group call gets disconnected. So please wait till at least 11:30, or if you have to leave the computer, then you can leave. When I end the call, automatically the call will disconnect. Is anything from anyone to share? Any realizations, any inspiration? All right. From next week, there will be a slight change. I'm going to India on Monday. I'm flying on 3rd February and I'll be back on 18th March. So Gunarupini Devi Dasi, Deepika Agarwal, she will be running the conference calls. And she'll be sending out emails and setting the call. And also the Skype details will change. So she will send that in the email. So all of you, please keep joining because she's going to keep... If there is discussion amongst yourselves, that is good. But even if there is not much discussion, please continue the call. And please keep reading. So she will continue reading from text 29 onwards. And you all keep reading. I will come back and do a recap of what you have read. But it is important that you will continue reading. The continuity should not be broken. And if anyone wants to share anything, she will facilitate the call. And if she has any points also, she will also share. But please read the translations and the purports of everyone, every listening. as because these Prabhupada's purports are very powerful. He has written them for all of us, knowing our conditioning. And if we read the purports, it will be very, very powerful for all of us twice a week. So please keep doing that, and please pray for my India trip. It is nice, and I get to do some service over there also. Thank you very much. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, God Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.
Okay. Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.